I'm Reverend Lisa Day, minister of the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Welcome to our weekly radio program, where you'll hear a segment from one of our recent services recorded at our church on beautiful Troop Square. We invite you to join us Sundays at 11 a.m. in person or via live stream on Zoom. You can find the Zoom link and more about Unitarian Universalism in Savannah at our website, uusavannah.org. We hope you enjoy today's program.
Good morning. Hello to my humanist healing. Happy to be here, heard. I welcome you as one of your own. My name is Jessica Levitt Watara, and I am happy to be serving as worship associate today. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Our minister, Reverend Lisa Day, is our worship leader this morning. Sandy Mucci will bring our Love at the Center moment. Our worship, religious education, and covenant group theme for the month of January is practicing resistance. Here at the UU Church of Savannah, we are working to build a diverse, multicultural, beloved community. We celebrate the presence and participation of people of all races, genders, sexual orientations, abilities, and ethnic and national origins. We warmly welcome you on YouTube or here in the sanctuary, whoever you know yourself to be, and wherever you are on your journey. In the Unitarian Universalist faith, our chalice is symbolic of the light of reason, the warmth of community, and the flame of hope. Today, our chalice words come from an unknown source. To face the world's coldness, a chalice of warmth. To face the world's terrors, a chalice of courage. To face the world's turmoil, a chalice of peace. May its glow fill our spirits, our hearts, and our lives.
Welcome, all who are restless for a world renewed. We come carried by ancestors who refused the silence of despair and dared to sing a new song. Their courage whispers through us still. Today we resist by showing up together. We resist by keeping faith with what is not yet. Our gathering is itself an act of sacred descent, calling us to rise and unite as co-creators of a freer tomorrow. Let us worship together.
Today, I'm reading an essay that I wrote as part of my collection, Widowing, Life Beyond Deep Grief. It's called Reflections on Change. When I hear the word change, I immediately think no one counts change backwards anymore. It's a lost skill. Young and old alike are tied to the number produced electronically to ring up the sale. If the power goes out, chaos ensues. A small thing, perhaps, but the ability to calculate without a machine empowers us to keep them honest. I went to college in a world without email, word processors, or cell phones. I spent joyful years learning from grandparents born into a world without planes, cars, or refrigerators. One of my earliest memories is of a visit to the family blueberry farm in Maine, my great-grandmother pushing me on the swing attached to the beams in the barn, a pungent two-holer instead of a bathroom, and acres of fragrant blueberry bushes. Bliss. I'm glad to live in a world with indoor plumbing, spell check, and hot showers. However, given a choice between that and the love of family or the joys of friendship, plumbing would lose. While reflecting on all that has changed, I began to consider what has remained the same. What are those constants in life that act as landmarks or guideposts, as a place to rest while the crazy world does its thing, you know, changing? Change also triggers a memory of a small ritual my late husband and I established during our more than 40 years together. I would say, "I'll be right there, just need to change." He'd reply, "You'll never change." He thought it was hysterical every time. It's one of those things that serves as a sweet reminder of times past. Hearing his voice every time I mention needing to change has brought the joke comfortably into my present. Our friendship continues. The truism that you can never step into the same river twice emphasizes the differences. However, it overlooks the importance of the river running on and on. Love, friendship, and family flow on, making life worth living. During the COVID-19 isolation, I became aware of how much I have lived my life in ignorance of the difference my white privilege provides. This is a change in my perception and outlook. While love, friendship, and family remain primary, the world itself no longer feels as safe as it once did. On a cold February afternoon, after receiving my first COVID-19 vaccine, I decided to stop at the liquor store on my way home. I pulled into the roadway leading to the parking lot, then realized I hadn't swung widely enough and was in a one-way lane going the wrong way. I had a blank mind, heart-racing moment before realizing that luckily there were two lanes in that direction, so I just needed to let a few vehicles go by before proceeding. An oversized pickup truck, driven by a man wearing a surgical mask, pulled right up to my front bumper, blocking my way, while shaking his head and wagging his finger at me. Other cars went by, but he didn't move. I could feel his anger emanating in waves. He picked up his phone, and I was okay with him calling the police. They all know me in town. I considered getting out of my car and going over to talk to him. However, something that I would have done without hesitation in the past now seemed too dangerous. He could have had a gun. He was wearing a mask, so maybe I was the proverbial straw added to his frustration over non-mask-wearing, wrong-mask-wearing, rude people going the wrong way down the marked aisle of the grocery store, scofflaws. I'll never know. I do know that although the world feels more dangerous, and perhaps in ways it is, that feeling is based on how I perceive the world. The change is mine, not the world's. It was getting dark, and I had a Zoom meeting to attend, so I backed up and went home without stopping at the store. No Prosecco for me. This incident shook me and conflated with the threatening new flags and political signs that sprouted up everywhere. What do they actually mean? The message is clear. We are angry. Beware. My privilege does not, cannot, and should not protect me. Isolation during the pandemic, combined with the reading I've been doing on racism in this country, past and present, changed my view of the world and my role in it. Racism didn't die when the Civil Rights Act was passed. Sexism didn't wither during the Enlightenment of the 60s, and religious bigotry and persecution are thriving everywhere. So little has really changed. It left me wondering if I'm truly a little old lady target now. I choose to answer no, because living in fear is unacceptable. Also, focusing on what hasn't happened doesn't solve anything. Personal action does. Progress has been made, but there is so much more that needs to be done. I've lost the timid anxiety that infected me when first reentering public spaces post-COVID isolation. The world still feels angry and dangerous, and that hasn't changed. However, anger, ignorance, and racism seem more pronounced and socially acceptable in ways that were unimaginable when I was raising my family. I'm still cautious, but I believe we are seeing the last actions of a vicious mindset. Since I'm an optimist, I'm looking forward to the equal and opposite reaction to come. The scent of blueberries still takes me back to Maine, and I believe that love, friendship, and family are essential to making life worth living. That will never change.
Let's continue in a spirit of meditation. On this Martin Luther King Jr. Sunday, after we pause to remember the man, the face, the voice, the vision and leadership, may we let those specific memories, those sounds and images and ideas swirl into translucency, fade into whispers, clearing space for other memories, other voices, other faces, other visions and leadership. Fannie Lou Hamer. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired. John Lewis. Get into good trouble, necessary trouble. Claudette Colvin. My mindset was on freedom, so I was not going to move that day. History had me glued to that seat. Paul Wellstone. We all do better when we all do better. Jesus of Nazareth. And the king will answer them, truly I tell you, just as you did to one of the least of these who are members of my family, you did it to me. And then may we let these memories, these sounds and images and ideas also swirl into translucency, fade into whispers, clearing space for still other voices, other faces, other visions and leadership, blurry faces, indistinct voices of uncounted unknown prophets, sowers of peace, builders of justice through the ages. Which side are you on? No one is illegal. Don't mourn, organize. Si se pueda. No justice, no peace. Power to the people. And then may we let those sounds and images and ideas also swirl into translucency, fade into whispers, clearing spaces for other voices, other faces, other vision and leadership. Our face, our voice, our ideas, our vision, our leadership. And so may we come to know in our bones that we too are prophets, sowers of peace, builders of justice, saviors of our neighbors, our communities, our nation. Our first reading this morning comes from the Christian scriptures from the book of Luke, chapter 10, verses 25 through 37. Just then a lawyer stood up to test Jesus. Teacher, he said, what must I do to inherit life? He said to him, what is written in the law? What do you read there? He answered, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind and your neighbor as yourself. And he said to him, you have given the right answer. Do this and you will live. But wanting to justify himself, he asked Jesus, who is my neighbor? Jesus replied, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho and fell into the hands of robbers who stripped him, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, while traveling, came near him, and when he saw him, he was moved with pity. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, having poured oil and wine on them. Then he put him on his own animal, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper and said, take care of him. And when I come back, I will repay you whatever more you spend. Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of the robbers? He said, the one who showed him mercy. Jesus said to him, go and do likewise. From Marcus Amaker, the America I know could use a good cry. I met America at a neighborhood bar. He offered me a shot of rum, and I reminded him that Captain Morgan was a slave owner, so the bartender awkwardly slipped another liquid lie down my throat. I ordered another drink and was channeled by dark spirits, the courage of black ghosts who haunt American dreams. I told him I loved him and I wanted him to sleep well, but I know I've been in your nightmares, I said. I want to be your friend, but only if it's a deep relationship, only if you show me that you are not scared of your baggage. Bring your whole history to the table. America cracked open another beer as a tear ran down his face. He said, I was born in a house not my own, and my fathers demanded that their portraits hang on every wall. White paint covers each brown brick, and our backyard is a museum of unmarked graves. Despite this, a garden grows, I said, and every home can be torn down and rebuilt again. But I've been told I shouldn't completely let you in, he said. Some people in my family stand in the doorway blocking the entrance. He left before I could tell him that my people have a history of finding ways inside broken spaces and making them whole again. And finally, from Samaj Brown, Black Dandelion. Age 4, witnessed my first mow down, twinkling ground stars cut by murderous lawnmower, feeling the blade I fell curled like a snail in grief. 12 full moons folded into spring, perennial promises prevailed, bees celebrated return of dandelions in a skirt of twirling yellow bliss. Flowering bouffant mirrored my spiky little afro. Jagged-edged lion's tooth leaves paid tribute to my snag-a-tooth smile. Me and my freedom-fighting flowers frolicked to survive the scissoring, up-digging, poisoning, warning signs hovered like low-hanging clouds. No blooming allowed. Blossoms will be prosecuted. These brave plants grew just for me, grew in spite of a society that favored a monochromatic landscape. 1965. Mr. Brother Malcolm X was assassinated. Big word for a pre-kindergartner. I was convinced he must have been a dandelion. Reverend King, too, and the Johnson boy who lived one turn down the street that way. The Johnson boy who was shot by the police for growing in a monochromatic landscape. Training wheels off, bike riding across insecure cement, I pedaled the bumpy path, waving solidarity to each surviving sunburst noggin, each fulfilling the promise to ornament lawns and flourish souls with lemon drop hope. Dandelions bear art of endurance and escape, transforming into pearl puffs, floating with ephemeral intention, carrying the spirit of the weed. 13 full moons faded into July. I am a proud weed. Yes, I declared that shocking proclamation standing in the pulpit on Youth Sunday, Vernon Chapel AME Church. I added to my speech on David and Goliath my impromptu improvisation of the dandelion dogma. We are black dandelions who will never be destroyed. We grow the power of goodness for generations into the future. I yet remember the hat-framed faces of the pious, amused, and mortified. Here end the readings. I want to preach against the easy lure of the dream today, against the ubiquitous feel-good images of little black children and little white children holding hands or pretending to be twins in identical outfits, against the gimmicky yet powerful video of skeletons dancing and holding hands, skeletons that then step out from behind the screen, becoming flesh and blood in all the detail not visible in the dancing x-rays, black from one side, white from the other, young, old, apparently male, apparently female, obviously queer and obviously or not straight, nun, rabbi, priest, and imam. I want to preach against the easy lure of the dream. You know the one about little children being judged not by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. All of that is too easy, too at odds with the hate and greed-fueled chaos no longer looming on the horizon, but rather permeating every cell of our neighborhoods, communities, cities, states, and country. The cuteness, the "see, we're all alike all under our skin" message feel like pie in the sky wishfulness at best, lies or deliberate obfuscation of reality at worst. Which is not to say there aren't real and deep cross-racial friendships, relationships, and marriages, or countless communities where interfaith cooperation results in vibrant cultural life and strong social safety nets, or that these and other manifestations of the dream should not be celebrated. It is only to say that Dr. King's dream has not yet been fully realized, and the fulfillment of it will never come through pretending it has already arrived, or through focusing only on the dream and not the means of achieving it. I want to preach against celebrating a sanitized and frozen moment out of the brief but rich, nuanced, and challenging public ministry of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. What about Dr. King's opposition to the U.S. involvement in Vietnam, I want to ask? What about him expanding his prophetic ministry to encompass a demand for economic justice? What about the fact that when he was assassinated, Dr. King was in Memphis to lead a march of striking sanitation workers? The temptation and danger of an MLK Day sermon is that of assuming we know, across the distance of nearly 60 years since his death, across, in my case, divides of race and gender, assuming we know what Dr. King would say and do in this moment. It's tempting to say if he were alive today, and remember he would be 97, if he were alive today. It is tempting to say if he were alive today, Martin Luther King Jr. would be on our side. On our side, supporting, protecting, celebrating trans and queer lives. On our side, supporting, protecting, celebrating immigrants and their contributions to our society. On our side, advocating for affordable access to comprehensive health care, including mental health. on our side calling for an end to the occupation of Palestine, on our side demanding living wages and safe workplaces and social safety nets, on our side defending democracy and the rule of law. Whoops, that one's tricky. Breaking the law was a crucial component of the civil rights movements of the 1950s and 1960s. Maybe his children could say which side he'd be on. Maybe serious scholars of his life and legacy could say, at least with more certainty than I can say. I can only say that, informed by my limited study and knowledge, I believe Dr. King would be on the side of the oppressed, whoever they are at any given moment and in any particular setting, and further would be on the side of addressing the underlying systems that give rise to some being oppressed. A couple weeks back, I read part of a speech he gave in opposition to U.S. involvement in Vietnam. In another section of the speech, other than what I read to you, he said, "A true revolution of values will come, A true revolution of values will soon cause us to question the fairness and justice of many of our past and present policies. On the one hand, we are called to play the Good Samaritan on life's roadside, but that will only be an initial act. One day we must come to see that the whole Jericho Road must be transformed so that men and women will not be constantly beaten and robbed as they make their journey on life's highway. True compassion is more than flinging coins to a beggar. It comes to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring." We can't definitively know what the man would call for today, but we know what he called for in his time, and we know that the needs he sought to address then are still largely unmet today. The location of the Jericho Road may have changed, or perhaps multiplied. The identity of the traveler may have changed. The role of the Good Samaritan is unchanged. Protests in Minneapolis, in Portland, in Chicago, rallies in other cities across the country, including Savannah, whenever trouble arises, demands that ICE, an agency that only came into existence in 2003, after all, be abolished. The call for the nation's clergy of all faiths to gather in Minneapolis later this week, reminiscent of the call that brought several hundred clergy to Selma in 1965. We can view all of these as both the actions of Good Samaritans tending to travelers who have been beset, stripped, and beaten by robbers, and as the beginnings of transforming the Jericho Road. I want to preach against the lure of the easy dream, and I have, but it is a worthy dream. More than that, it is a necessary dream, because if our only vision is what we don't want, then we will never get what we do want. Still, this Martin Luther King Jr. Day and all the days between now and the next one, and all the days after that, our task isn't primarily dreaming. Our twofold task is embodying the Good Samaritan and transforming the Jericho Road. The UUA's Side with Love ministry is a great resource to check out if you're uncertain where to start as either a Good Samaritan or in the transforming of the Jericho Road. In our full pursuit, in our pursuit of the full realization of the dream that yet could be, as we undertake the arduous work of transforming the Jericho Road, let us be sustained by all that already is. Neighbors supporting neighbors, witnesses recording unlawful actions, community members protecting children and their parents at drop-offs and pickups, school systems going virtual when that protection isn't enough, rather than endanger their families, and myriad images and accounts of the power and the resilience of the very communities most at risk, including these from this morning's readings. My people have a history of finding ways inside broken spaces and making them whole again. We are black dandelions who will never be destroyed. We grow the power of goodness for generations into the future. May it be so. Amen.
This is Reverend Lisa Day. I hope you've enjoyed this program from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Savannah. Please join us at one of our services sometime soon at our church on Troop Square or live on Zoom. We're the beacon of liberal religion in Savannah, and you can find out more at uusavannah.org. We meet on Sundays at 11 a.m. Thanks for listening.